Welcome to the reading of Military Times. My name is Rob Johnson. In our first story from Your Military Magazine, just one promotion remains blocked due to officers' views on diversity. The Senate confirmed large batches of Defense Department nominees this month, ending a 10-month blockade on military promotions for hundreds of officers, except for one. As the Senate gaveled out for their holiday recess on Wednesday, the promotion of Air Force Colonel Benjamin Johnson, J-O-N-S-S-O-N, remained on hold. Even after months-long blockade on military promotions was lifted this month, this by Senator Tommy Tuberville, a Republican from Alabama, who was protesting military abortion access policies, another senator stepped in to block Johnson's promotion to Brigadier General. Senator Eric Schmidt, a Republican from Missouri, is stonewalling the promotion because of his concerns about the man's stances on the military's diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Schmidt's office did not elaborate on his reason for the hold, other than to describe DEI programs as divisive and to note that Schmidt was a proponent of ending them. Senator Schmidt has been an advocate for eradicating these DEI programs and hopes to resolve these issues to ensure that these divisive DEI programs don't continue to drive a wedge between military members and deepen the already existing recruiting crises, Will O'Grady, Schmidt's press secretary, said in a statement. Because Johnson's, again J-O-N-S-S-O-N's, nomination was not approved before the Senate recess for the year, the White House will have to resubmit his nomination for promotion to the Senate in 2024, according to Senate rules described by the Congressional Research Service. The officer has faced public criticism after submitting a commentary for Air Force Times in 2020, which was titled, "Dear White Colonel, We Must Address Our Blind Spots Around Race." The Air Force colonel wrote the opinion piece just days after the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. In it, he argued other white colonels to acknowledge racial disparities in the Air Force, and he relayed specific instances in which white colonels were unwilling to discuss problems of racism, discrimination, and inequality. Johnson entered the piece by encouraging white colonels to read the book, White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism, a New York Times bestseller recommended by various news publications and universities that to readers who want to educate themselves about racism amid the fallout from George Floyd's murder. As white colonels, you and I are the biggest barriers to change if we do not personally address racial injustice in our Air Force, he wrote. Defensiveness is a predictable response by white people to any discussion of racial injustice. White colonels are no exception. We are largely blind to institutional racism, and we take offense to any suggestion that our system advantaged us at the expense of others. The Heritage Foundation wrote sharp criticism of Johnson after the Defense Department announced his promotion to Brigadier General earlier this year. The conservative think tank took issue with the man's commentary in Air Force Times and argued he had espoused woke views, referring to what the group sees as radically progressive DEI policies. Those policies don't fall in line with traditional American values, the Heritage Foundation wrote. The think tank also blasted Johnson for recommending the book, White Fragility, which they claim endorsed so-called critical race theory, which centers on the idea that racism is systemic in the nation's institutions. Colonel Johnson exhibited a toxic embrace of DEI policies that have no place in the U.S. military, wrote William Tribue, T-R-I-B-E-A-U, who works for the conservative think tank Claremont Institute in the Heritage Foundation's post. His public characterization of White Colonel's blindness is inherently divisive and sends shockwaves throughout the command. Johnson was the vice wing commander for the 379th Air Expeditionary Wing at the air base in Qatar when he penned the commentary for Air Force Times. In 2022, he assumed the role of vice superintendent of the Air Force Academy before moving this summer to Air Mobility Command at Scott Air Force Base in Illinois, a spokesperson with the Air Force Academy said. According to his military biography, Johnson flew some of the initial C-17A combat missions of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom. He was later accepted into the Olmsted OLMSTED Scholar Program, which awards scholarships to junior officers to pursue overseas graduate-level education. And he was not the only officer to be blocked by Schmidt, meanwhile, due to concerns over DEI policies, but he is currently the last officer to have his promotion stalled. Schmidt originally placed a hold on 6 officers, but listed the blockade on 5 of them. The Senate cleared those 5 confirmations late last week, and on Tuesday the chamber confirmed 11 senior military nominees who had been stalled for months. Oppositions to the Pentagon's DEI efforts have spiked among select conservative lawmakers since 2020, when Congress first expanded such programs and mandated the Defense Department's hiring of a chief diversity officer, said Liz Yates, a researcher with the advocacy group Human Rights First. Attempts by some lawmakers to dismantle the military's DEI programs reached a flashpoint earlier this year as the House and Senate struggled to come to terms on the National Defense Policy Bill. Congress approved a version of the bill earlier this month that capped the base pay of DEI staff at the Pentagon and instituted a hiring freeze on DEI positions until the Government Accountability Office completes an investigation of the military's DEI programs. However, more severe proposals by GOP members were omitted from the final text, including one measure to eliminate the position of chief diversity officer. With all but Johnson's confirmation approved, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York, lauded the advancements Wednesday as a very good outcome and urged senators not to hold military families hostage for political agendas from either side. I hope this never happens again. Let the experience of the past 10 months be a warning. No senator should use our military officers and their families as political pawns to push a political agenda, Schumer said on the Senate floor prior to breaking for holiday recess. This was a long and painful ordeal for our armed forces. Let's make sure this never happens again, no matter how strongly any of the 100 senators feel about any particular issue. In our next story, lawmakers want military researchers to determine whether the COVID-19 vaccine caused more harm than good for service members. Included in the annual defense authorization bill passed by Congress earlier this month is language calling for a study to assess and evaluate any health conditions and adverse events arising in service members on active duty 1 year after receiving the first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. Researchers will be required to report their findings back to lawmakers in December of 2024. The vaccine has been a target of conservative lawmakers for years. In the fiscal 2023 defense authorization bill, lawmakers repealed the Defense Department's mandate for all troops to receive the vaccine. This year's bill also contains a host of provisions related to potential re-enlistment of individuals kicked out of the ranks for refusing to get the vaccine. But the research mandate, inserted by Republican House members during debate on the legislation, takes that further, again calling into question the safety of the vaccine. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have said that serious problems linked to the vaccine are rare and long-term side effects unlikely. They have also said the medical research thus far has not shown any increased risk of deaths associated with receiving the inoculation, while contracting coronavirus does carry an increased risk of death. But the agency has documented allergic reactions and heart problems in a small percentage of vaccine recipients. The study will look at any health condition developed after receiving such first dose, regardless of whether the condition is attributable to the receipt of said such first dose, and an accounting of adverse events, including hyperimmune response linked to the vaccine. House Republicans had also pushed for language prohibiting military leaders from mandating masks to prevent the spread of future COVID-19 outbreaks, but that language was dropped in final deliberations over the bill. Joe Biden is expected to sign the authorization bill by the end of the month. And the approaching new year will provide the first full calendar year with the Army's two new senior leaders at the helm. And if the early portions of their respective tenures are any indication, discipline is the service's new watchword. General Randy George, who was confirmed as the Army's Chief of Staff in September of 2023, professes four top priorities: warfighting, continuous transformation, strengthening the profession, and delivering ready combat formations. Underpinning many of those efforts is a promise re-emphasis on standards and discipline, the latter of which has already proved a major focus for Sergeant Major of the Army Michael Weimer, W-E-I-M-E-R, who became the service's top NCO in August of 23. Weimer told Army Times in October that units are built on the discipline of their individual soldiers, who in turn receive their cues from non-commissioned officers. At the Association of the U.S. Army's annual conference that month, Weimer announced the service is developing a new digital blue book designed to arm leaders with up-to-date information to assist them with instilling discipline. The application is expected to begin beta testing in the fall of 24. The new leader's focus seems likely to replace its previous People First slogan, which was championed by now retired General James McConville and Sergeant Major of the Army Michael Grinston. Take the fate of its namesake People First Task Force, the group which was created to address the findings and recommendations of the Fort Hood Independent Review Committee's December 2020 report, quietly dissolved in mid-2023, and its director, Major General Christopher Norrie, took command of the 3rd Infantry Division. Although the task force did not issue a public final report, many of its initiatives and functions were absorbed into the service's G9 Installations and Quality of Life Directorate. Time check is nearly 15 minutes past the hour. A civilian mariner has filed a lawsuit against the Navy's Military Sealift Command, alleging she was sexually assaulted in her bed aboard the expeditionary fast transport ship Carson City by the ship's civilian skipper in December of 2021. The November 29th complaint alleges that the command failed Elsie Dominguez, through inadequate security and protection procedures and for providing inadequate resources and support after the alleged assault, among many shortcomings. The lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of New Jersey also alleges that victim advocates intimated that she would lose her job if she reported the rape. MSC is a command that runs about 125 civilian crewed ships that provide ocean transport across the Defense Department, replenishing Navy ships, overseeing strategically pre-positioned combat cargo, and moving service members and supplies as they are needed. Dominguez opted to identify herself publicly in the lawsuit, but not the captain who allegedly raped her and whom the lawsuit alleges is still employed by the command. Christine Dunn, D-U-N-N, one of the attorneys representing Dominguez, told Navy Times the alleged assailant is left unnamed in order to keep the focus on the man's position as captain of a Navy ship and MSC's systemic failures that allowed the attack to happen in the first place. MSC spokesman Thomas Van Loonen said the accused captain was on administrative leave pending completion of a Naval Criminal Investigative Service investigation. Dominguez formally reported the alleged rape to authorities in June. The NCIS and the Coast Guard's equivalent agency opened investigations, and the captain was relieved and returned to the U.S. for questioning. Van Loonen declined further specific comment, citing the ongoing investigation and litigation. MSC takes allegations of sexual assault very seriously and remains committed to ensuring a safe and respective environment for all personnel, he said. Navy Times could not independently verify the man's identity or reach him for comment. We have not identified the mariner yet, as the investigation is not yet complete, Van Loonen said in an email. He hasn't been charged with anything at this point, and he remains on leave. Dominguez served aboard the Carson City until late October and remains employed by the command while in a leave status. According to the lawsuit, Dominguez began working on board the Carson City in October of 2021. She first met her alleged assailant and future captain of the Carson City in 2014 while aboard the Spearhead, another of the catamaran-like expeditionary fast transports on which he was second mate. For the 2 years they worked together on Spearhead, Dominguez and the man had a cordial and friendly relationship that was never intimate or sexual, according to the lawsuit. But during her first month aboard the Carson City, the man, now the ship's captain, invited her to his stateroom to watch a movie, then initiated sex, according to the lawsuit. The experience, the lawsuit alleges, was demeaning and upsetting to Dominguez, who felt she couldn't tell him to stop since he was the boss. After that, the lawsuit states, she declined his invitations and avoided him, making clear she was not interested in his advances. But when the Spearhead was docked in Italy on December 18th of 2021, the two were ashore at a bar together. The lawsuit states that Dominguez only had a beer and a single shot of liquor, yet found herself intoxicated to the point of being incapacitated and blacking out. She says that she was drugged. From conversations with crew after the fact, she learned, according to the suit, that she had been helped back to the ship, her shirt covered in vomit, and returned to her stateroom. According to a WhatsApp, WHATS-APP chat log cited in the lawsuit, the captain called her at least 14 times while she lay unconscious and texted her about his desire to spend the night with her. The ship's captain used a master code issued by MSC to gain access to her room, according to the lawsuit, and Dominguez awoke, still incapacitated, to discover that he was sexually assaulting her. The following day, when Dominguez told the ship's chief engineer that she wanted to go back to Italy and get a drug test, the suit alleges the engineer strongly discouraged her from getting the test, leaving her feeling unable to override him. When she confronted the captain, he threatened her, saying she would probably get taken off the ship if she requested a drug test, according to the lawsuit. Dominguez's attempts to report her rape were likewise thwarted by lack of support and resources, according to the lawsuit. It alleges MSC had failed to post information about its sexual assault prevention and response program, including contact information for the assigned coordinators. Dominguez said she had to find information on MSC's website about her options, ultimately calling MSC's 24-hour sexual assault line. The civilian advocate she reached told her she could not make a restricted report concealing her identity, but had to make an unrestricted report because she was a civilian, the lawsuit alleges. The advocate warned Dominguez that if she made an unrestricted report, she would be immediately removed from her position and then flown from Italy back to the United States, where she would be interviewed by federal law enforcement agents and forced into a highly public process, according to the lawsuit. Fearing the loss of her job if she pursued the reporting option, Dominguez began sleeping with the chair wedged against her door to keep the captain out and requested that a deadbolt be installed on her door. That bolt would not be installed until the following August, the suit states, and no one followed up with her about the danger her request implied. Dominguez remained with the Carson City, trapped aboard the vessel with her attacker, who was also her boss, according to the lawsuit. Well, here's something that keeps me up at night. The question is, where is the Navy's beard study? What do you think about that? When, if ever, will it be made public, and will its findings lead to a sea change in allowed sailor stubble? Well, these questions aren't new. From online forums to all-hand calls, many active-duty sailors have said they'd like to grow a beard, even as some who sport them for medical reasons say they are sometimes ostracized for their facial hair. Big Navy has said no to beards for everyone, citing concerns that sailors can't get a snug oxygen mask seal with facial hair should they have to fight a shipboard fire. Still, Navy Secretary Carlos Del Toro directed that the service conduct a fresh assessment of the issue in 2022 as part of the department's diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. Officials said that they expected the study to wrap up sometime this year. With 2023 now largely in the rearview mirror, whether the fleet will get the study's results or substantial facial hair policy changes next year, 24, remains to be seen. Del Toro's office did not respond to multiple emails seeking the status of the beard study. Navy officials have previously cited two Naval Safety Center reviews that found even a few days' stubble might impact a mask seal. But the service's safety records show that just one incident occurred over the past few decades in which a beard prevented a proper seal. That instance involved a civilian shipyard worker. A 2021 Military Medicine article also referenced assessments showing that half-face respirators were 98% effective with a 1/8-inch beard and 100% effective with a 1/16-inch beard. The Navy's current beard waiver policy limits the hair to a quarter of an inch. In our next story, Senate lawmakers last Tuesday evening confirmed 11 senior military nominees that had been stalled for months, putting an end to the nearly year-long political blockade by Alabama Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville, which had created leadership problems across the Defense Department. Tuberville, earlier this month, lifted his hold on more than 400 nominees whom he had blocked due to his objections over the military abortion access policies. At the time, he said he would keep his hold on the 11 four-star nominees in a continuation of that protest, but he relented this week amid additional pressure from both Democratic and Republican leaders. The individuals confirmed in group vote include the heads of three combatant commands and the second-ranking official for four of the five military services. Lieutenant General Christopher Mahoney was confirmed as the Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps in November. The rest include Air Force Lieutenant General Kevin B. Schneider, nominated to be Commander of Pacific Air Forces. Air Force General Kenneth S. Walbach, nominated to the head of Air Combat Command. Air Force Lieutenant General Gregory M. Gallot, G-L-I-L-L-O-T, nominated to be head of U.S. Northern Command. Air Force Lieutenant General Timothy D. Haugh, H-O-U-G-H, nominated to be head of U.S. Cyber Command. Air Force Lieutenant General James C. Slife, nominated to be Vice Chief of Staff of the Air Force. Army Lieutenant General James J. Mingus, nominated to be Vice Chief of Staff of the Army. Navy Vice Admiral James W. Kilby, nominated to be Vice Chief of Naval Operations. Navy Vice Admiral Stephen D. Kohler, nominated to be head of U.S. Pacific Fleet. Navy Vice Admiral William J. Houston, nominated to be Director of the Navy Nuclear Propulsion Program. Space Force Lieutenant General Michael A. Guetlein, nominated to be Vice Chief of Space Operations. And Space Force Lieutenant General Stephen N. Whiting, to be head of U.S. Space Command. Pentagon officials in recent days had said the positions are critical for national security, and it urged senators to find a way to get them confirmed before the end of the year. The Senate was scheduled to leave town last week, but Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York, extended the chamber's session by a few days in part to get the military confirmations cleared. If the senior officers had not been approved by the end of the month, the White House would have needed to resubmit their nominations for consideration in 2024. In the end, military leaders saw their senior officials confirmed without making any of the changes demanded by Tuberville to the abortion access policy. Senate leaders could have moved any one of the 430-plus nominees held up by Tuberville since the blockade started in late February, and the chamber did approve a handful of individuals in standalone votes during recent months. But Schumer and all the other Democrats argued the moves broke chamber precedent for non-controversial military promotions and nominations. They also worried that given the large number of officers involved, typical Senate procedures would have taken months of time-consuming work on the Senate floor. Thanks to Tuberville's reversal, late last week, Senate leaders cleared a handful of lower-ranking nominees held up by Senator Eric Schmidt, a Republican from Missouri, over concerns he had about the Defense Department diversity training programs. They also advanced legislation to give back pay and retroactive benefits to officers whose nominations had been held up by Tuberville's protest. Schumer said that providing back pay is the very, very least the Senate could do to right this awful wrong. However, House lawmakers will have to approve that legislation before the senior leaders receive any money. The House began its holiday recess on December 15th and will not consider the bill's amendments until January. Tuberville has promised to continue to hold all senior civilian Pentagon nominees in protest of the abortion access policy, which grants leave time and travel stipends to troops who are forced to travel across state lines to have an abortion. Currently, that hold applies to only one individual, Ronald, last name Keohane, K-E-O-H-A-N-E, Joe Biden's pick to be the Assistant Secretary for Manpower and Reserve Affairs. That's the latest news from Military Times. My name is Rob Johnson. Until we meet again.